God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
The universe created the world. He didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I might be able to provide a little bit of insight into the happenings behind the scenes at the Republican National Convention. I was on the leadership team of the Republican National Committee, one of, I guess, 10 or 12 people on that committee for about 2 years. Fascinating period of time, and I agreed to do it for one single term. Never had any intention of remaining in Washington, D.C., because I never had the intention of walking into the bed of an adulteress. That's what Washington, D.C. is, in a sense. Power so easy to have, so easy to attain, money so easy, people roll in it. I'm not to say that there's not smart people back there. In fact, a lot of smart people go there. But I'll give you sort of a taste of a lot of young people in Washington, D.C., a lot of them. I was in the offices of, I'm trying to think where I was. It wasn't the Heritage Foundation, it was nearby. No, it was a Senate building. I was in a Senate office building getting ready to have a meeting with one of the great men, one of the senators, talking to some young staffers and talking politics, as was our wont. This young man said to me, you know, people ask me, hey, are you blue or red, meaning Democrat or Republican? And I tell him I'm neither. I'm green. This is where the money is. That's why I was there. The green, the cash. He was honest. A lot of people are doing that. For a long time, the Republican base, and I used to be a Republican. I'm not anymore. I'm a Christian, constitutional, conservative populist. That's a mouthful. Christian because the Lord Jesus is King. Conservative because or constitutional because that's a rule system that is based upon a godly form of governance. I believe we've talked about that on this show. That God, when he set up human governance, made it diffuse, separated the powers, checks and balances. And conservative because I would like to conserve those things. That is respect for the Christian faith, respect for all faiths, but adherence to the Christian faith. Not on a push-down basis, not as a theocracy. You can't have a Christian theocracy in my mind. But those structures. And conservative, because I want to conserve those things. Populist, only so long as populism has the goal of the above. That is a Christian constitutional conservative approach to governance. I say populism because it's not going to get done through D.C., so I'm no longer Republican, but I worked on the leadership team. For many, many years, the Republican base has been a deep form of embarrassment to professional Republicans. We stink. We are impolite. We have guns. We are, I guess, happy to have guns. We don't want them taken away. And then we have this nasty, nasty habit of speaking about the... And forgive me, the social issues, sorry. Oh, that there, the social issues. It's that thing. They can't stand it. Makes them feel uncomfortable. And it should. It should. Our hearts know right from wrong. Our hearts are deceptive. They're deceitful above all things, but they know right from wrong. Sometimes, because a thing is wrong, the heart wants it. That's the brokenness of sin. The Republican power base, the professional Republicans, by which I mean people who are paid to be Republican, whatever that means at the time. What are the core principles of Republicaning? There aren't any. You get Republicans elected. What does Republican mean? It's changing. It's changing. So for years, there's been this embarrassment. And I'm starting to notice in this Republican National Convention some people coming on stage who are what the world would call diverse. And I want to be very, very clear. I have never met Amber Rose. I do not know her heart. I cannot judge her. That is judge. That God is judge. We can discern. I don't know many of the speakers there, but I know this. that by bringing people on stage who have made money using sites like OnlyFans and based upon the flesh, you are making a change to the stage presence as you're making a change to the platform. The platform that now apparently fails to recognize marriage between one man and one woman as the definition of marriage. It's a, well, subtle change to not mention it. It's not like they're saying marriage can be, well, anybody and anybody. That's what the Democrats do. It can be anybody and anybody or any number of bodies. It's subtle, but it's important to track. Amber Rose gave a speech I watched. It was a fine speech. She talked about some of the issues that concern people like gas prices and inflation and family. And apparently she wants to protect her kids. And so she is now a Republican and feels like she's home. And her dad was a combat veteran. Welcome home, sir. Thank you for what you did for us. I did not hear her address what Hollywood is doing to kids. I did not hear her disown it. I did not hear her dip into the social issues, such as this. The destruction of the family, yeah, it's not taxes, it's not crime. Those are symptoms of the same disease, and the disease is sin. What Hollywood is doing to the family structure is, for them, money. For the enemy, it's war. Changing the definition of marriage ultimately ends the definition of parent. As that's going on and the definition of parent is being ended or changed or erased to the point of being meaningless, every single film studio seems ultimately and completely committed to dramatizing this all the way down into content for children. I didn't hear Amber Rose, who has a unique perspective. Few people get to be as famous as she is. She has a platform to say, we can't do this with kids. We can't do this with music. And maybe she is. She didn't at the Republican National Convention. Having Amber Rose on stage allows people like David Sacks to get on stage. And I want to be again clear here. David Sacks has done utterly brilliant tech work, utterly brilliant in the things of this world. He's been incredibly helpful at spreading at least some form of conservatism into San Francisco and bringing President Trump there, bravely, I would add. That doesn't come without a cost. I don't mean to criticize any of these people in terms of judging. I simply want to describe the dynamic. Years ago, taking Michael Steele out before, sadly, I don't know what happened to Michael. I have a sense, but I'd be guessing. He's now on MSNBC, and to stay on MSNBC, you have to be a certain brand of Republican, and it makes me very sad because Michael treated me very well. But taking Michael around to introduce him to donors, and I only got to do that a couple of times. I'm not a fundraiser or anything like that, but I knew some people. I knew some people who were big time in advertising Madison Avenue. I knew some Silicon Valley types, some venture capitalists. I knew some film studio people, some record company people. And taking Michael around to talk to them, they would say consistently the same thing. Until you guys get your party in order on the social issues, we can't help you. We simply can't support the Republican Party while you are engaged in these social issue positions we can't defend, meaning it embarrasses us. If you guys could come off the abortion stance and your stance against what they would call, well, what they would call gay marriage, I call same-sex so-called marriage. Until you come off of that, we can't be involved. See, we're social liberals and fiscal conservatives, and they would make that point. You guys don't know that we know that the Democrats are spending us into oblivion, borrow and spend and borrow. Of course we know that. We're business people. We see the books. But some things are more important than business, they'd say, such as the ability to love who you want, the ability for a woman to control her own body. And they would say these things. And Michael, for all his skill as a communicator, well, he didn't push back that hard on that. Those issues were never his issues, ever. Here's the problem. The drib and drab approach of the Republican platform now being molded to the world is a drib and drab approach to fighting a thing while becoming the thing. You become the thing you fight, you've lost. You cannot have this following combination. you'll have people tell you, and I used to get this a lot, well, I'm a fiscal conservative and a social liberal. No, you're not. You cannot be a fiscal conservative and a social liberal. Here's why. Liberalism has no core truth. Liberalism has no core principles. Social liberalism is the politics of feelings. Lust, coveting, worry, anxiety, that's what it is. It's not moral. It has no moral basis. It has no basis in truth. Ergo, things like this. President Trump is to blame for being shot because President Trump is controversial. Donald Trump was not controversial until Donald Trump ran for a president as a Republican, because he'd run for president before. People don't remember that, but with an independent party. He was not controversial then. He became controversial when he put an R by his name. How did he become controversial? The media said he's very controversial. Donald Trump had always said some outstandingly, well, kind of gross things. He was on Howard Stern's program and said some things that are very disturbing about his own daughter. This is the president. This is who he is. That didn't become controversial until the R went by his name. When the R went by his name, now everything changed. The controversy. Because politics has become faith for people of the left. Social liberalism is unmoored from simple truths. That person is a man. No, he says he's a woman. But that doesn't change. I'm a fiscal conservative and a social liberal. I like to go by the books when it comes to finances. I can read spreadsheets like nobody's business, create beautiful macros in an Excel spreadsheet. I can do financial forecasting. Don't think that I don't understand the economy. Okay, you don't. You understand spreadsheets. When you have raised a generation of kids to be the following: drug addicted, angry, sex bots, who believe they're owed everything and do not believe there's any truth but that which the government says, how do you go to that group of people and make a fiscal argument like we can't afford this? When they've been steeped in critical theory, they've been steeped in sex, they've been steeped in racism, they've been steeped in getting addicted to pharmaceuticals by the age of 11, how do you make that argument to them? My concern with the Republican National Convention is the drib-drab approach to becoming more and more like the thing they say they're fighting. And I say this at the most ironic time. I have this picture of President Trump on stage as this shot comes out, these shots. And we'll talk more about that. I am not done asking questions about that. We cannot allow this excuse to go by that it was a sloped roof. That's why that wasn't guarded. Did you hear that? That's what the Secret Service boss lady says. Well, the roof was sloped. Our agents could slip off. I have this image of President Trump turning his head, but it's specifically where he turned it, towards the evil. If President Trump had turned away from the evil, away from the shooter, he'd be a dead man. He turned towards the evil. And it was that which saved his life, in all likelihood. Changing the platform like this is turning your face away from the evil, pretending it's not there, pretending Hollywood and the porn culture and the OnlyFans culture isn't destroying souls and our country when it is. To face the evil is to have a black woman come on stage and talk about her faith, to talk about Hollywood and what it's doing to our kids. That's facing the evil and confronting it rather than turning your head and pretending it does not exist. So much more to get to. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. I am not done asking questions about the assassination attempt of on President Trump. And I wildly, I don't want to be, let me say it this way. I don't want to break a rule that a colleague, Ben Shapiro, created. And he created this rule that you're not to ask questions if you're just asking questions. And I think he was doing that in regard to questioning Israel. And I think that was his general point on this. But he said that commentators who are just asking questions are being disingenuous. I deeply disagree with Ben on this. I don't know Ben well, but I've met him and talked to him, and I just deeply disagree on this. Here are some of the questions I have, and I think they must be answered. And there's been attempts to answer it, and they're weak. Why on earth was no one responsible for that rooftop? Because no one was responsible. How do we know this? Because it's impossible that that rooftop was left unguarded if someone had been responsible for it. Because if that person had been responsible, they would have had a team behind them. You probably heard the interview yesterday with my friend Mike O'Rourke, a former Special Forces sniper who trained Special Forces snipers for 4 years. He said there's no possible explanation for the rooftop being left open. Because if Bob was responsible for it, but Bob got sick and couldn't come to work, then Stan would step up. Because that's how chain of command works. You take the job duty of the person you're replacing. So we'll get to this, these series of questions. I want to start, though, with some updates on this. NBC's Lester Holt and contributor Frank Figluas are worried about the RNC members murdering anti-Trump protesters.
Look, sadly, we've seen it over the last couple of years, haven't we, with people kind of taking on FBI buildings, and it doesn't end well for them, like Cincinnati, Ohio, or a man who tried to swing a weapon at FBI agents in Provo, Utah, who were arresting him. This kind of thing begets more violence and revenge. So if you're going to have protest areas in Milwaukee with presumably people who are anti Trump, can you imagine people who think in their head the answer is to seek revenge for today's event, maybe against those who are protesting against Trump? This presents quite the challenge for next week.
To just clarify the case of the man that the FBI killed in Provo, Utah, he was effectively immobile. He was deeply sick. He sent some horrible notes, apparently. And he was not a guy capable of launching a physical attack against any human being. They're comparing this to concern that a crowd of people are going to have a mass attack against anti-Trump protesters outside the convention. No, I think they want that to be the case. It's amazing to me that they can speak these words with any sense of consistency, given the fact that they decided to ignore for an entire 2.5 year basis, organized attacks against cops, organized and egged on by Black Lives Matter Incorporated. What do we want? Dead cops. When do we want them now? They don't mention the shooting in Dallas. Well, I think it was 7 cops who were murdered. That person was expressly doing that for Black Lives Matter Incorporated. A 100 to 200% increase in cops killed in random attacks. The attack on cops in Los Angeles, who were fighting for their lives. They were, again, ambushed, blocked from getting into the hospital by Black Lives Matter Incorporated protesters who blocked the entrance to the hospital. They're saying these things, wanting it to be the case that Republicans and conservatives engage in revenge because they need it to be the case. That way they can be on the right side of things. Satan has a very limited toolkit. Distort, distract, depress, obsess, to get us to obsessive things. The obsession about Donald Trump, a man who it seems clear to me, for whatever reason, God has chosen to protect from the biggest, worst mechanisms of runaway government. He's not in prison. He's not dead. That has to be divine. Despite all of these attacks on President Trump, 95% negative coverage, 5.3% positive, his favorability ratings are going up. The media is repeating lies that are no longer effective. Racism. He's a racist. He's a Nazi, no longer effective. Because people are watching and saying, no, he's a survivor. There's a leftist billionaire named Reid Hoffman. He does fascinating things for the little people, like trying to steal farmland in South Dakota, North Dakota, across the middle of the country. He, as I recall, was one of the investors in one of these groups to steal farmland in order to sequester carbon dioxide in these pipelines so that they could own this precious material they're telling the rest of us kills everybody. They could own it and pump it into these factories to make fake meat with it. Truly, that's one of the things they wanted to do. He's the founder of LinkedIn, very smart guy. He says he'd wish that former President Donald Trump became an actual martyr just days before the attempted assassination, this from The Federalist. Hoffman made the remark to his former classmate, Peter Thiel, when the two recently attended a conference in Idaho, according to Puck News. Thiel, a billionaire tech investor, thanked Hoffman for funding one of the many lawsuits against Trump, saying it turned the former president into a martyr and increased his chances of re-election this November. Hoffman reportedly responded, "Yeah, I wish I'd made him an actual martyr." He's going to, of course, want to walk that back. And he did try that on Twitter. Reid Hoffman wrote, first in everything, there is no place for political violence in our society. Assassination is not only categorically wrong, but also the assassination of a democracy. It's abhorrent that anyone has tried to assassinate President Trump. Everyone on all sides of this election should condemn political violence loudly and publicly. That includes President Biden, who last night said there's no place in America for this kind of violence. It also includes President Trump. Instead of calling the January 6th insurrectionist heroes, whom he intends to pardon and even hire into his government, he should speak out against political violence. When he warns against consequences of him losing the elections, he should not predict a bloodbath in a way that might incite future protesters' violence against his political opponents. He should clearly indicate, which he never has, that political violence is evil and unacceptable, even if the perpetrators are trying to do it to benefit him. Reid Hoffman is either ignorant or a liar. President Trump talked about an economic bloodbath. Economic. And I can play for you tens and tens of clips of Democrats saying it, of the figurehead himself saying it, of CNBC hosts saying it. And then this, President Trump on January 6th decried political violence. Proceed peacefully to the Capitol. Do not fight with the cops. They're our friends. He posted a video telling people to go home. It's over. Go home. Twitter took that video down, and most people didn't get to see it that day. It took weeks for it to come back. Well, actually, months. Fascinating what Reid Hoffman sees. Any assassination attempt, and this is, again, from The Federalist, that involves Chris Wray or Merrick Garland, we should assume is a cover-up. We should assume. Chris Wray covered up the fact that the FBI tried to rig an election with the Trump is a Russian plant thing. That's trying to rig an election. He covered it up. Chris Wray refuses to answer questions of Congress. Such as, hey, where are those Jeff Epstein tapes? Where are they? Merrick Garland refused to bring charges against the protesters who launched themselves outside the homes of Supreme Court justices, doing things like hanging them in effigy, which is expressly illegal according to federal law. He refused to pursue that. When one of those protesters turned out to be someone who went there to assassinate Chief Justice John Roberts, Merrick Garland did not rush to a camera or a film studio and say, political violence has no place in America. Merrick Garland has never gone after a full-scale pursuit of Black Lives Matter Incorporated for what they did to try to destroy the country by getting cops killed. He's never gone after them for the financial crimes they committed, for things like embezzlement. The fact that Patrice Colliers has a $6 million home in Topanga Canyon, California, after having worked at Black Lives Matter Incorporated, which was some kind of entity, a charity, was that what it was? It was a domestic terror group. Clearly, in my opinion, God has decided to protect President Trump. How else does a man not end up in prison? How else does this happen? Just before this convention, we had, of course, the assassination attempt, and we'll come back to that. We had Jack Smith's documents case against President Trump dismissed. And the judge made the proper decision here. Why? Well, because it's cut and dried. When the judge, Eileen Cannon, ruled that the entire case should be thrown up because the appointment of special counsel who brought the case violated the Constitution, she was stating a point of fact. It's not controversial. Who has the right to spend government money in a budget? Where must that begin? Spending plans. Congress. Who makes laws? Congress and the Senate. Who enforces them? The DOJ and some of the other entities enforce the laws. Can the DOJ make its own money? Create its own budget? No. It has to have Congress do that. Congress no longer makes budgets. They choose not to do that. One constitutional provision they are supposed to carry out, and they choose not to. They do continuing resolutions because everybody knows they're lying about money. Everybody in Washington, D.C. knows we're functionally bankrupt. They're just playing the game. But still, the DOJ can't just create its own money, nor can it create its own positions. It doesn't get to just say, hey, we're going to have a special counsel. That has to go through Congress. It never did. Everything Jack Smith did was illegal, unconstitutional, including the raid on President Trump's house. God, I believe, is revealing to us the degree to which that machine, Washington, D.C., is lawless. It's not the lawless one. It's paving the path for the lawless one. Satan is all kinds of smart. He runs his organization like a military concern with leaders of tens and hundreds and thousands. He sits at the top and he's smart. He's normalizing some things. Look about you. Lawlessness. It becomes normalized. It's going to be a lot easier when the lawless one comes along and is openly lawless, when the nation has been made lawless, when people like Jack Smith aren't having their cases thrown out, when corrupt judges like Judge Marchand in New York is not overturned in the Supreme Court, which he'll almost certainly be since his conviction was not unanimous. The Supreme Court has ruled you have to have unanimous convictions. It's normalizing. I'll remind you, prior to 9/11, those terrorists took dry runs to practice. I'll remind you of this. Dry runs are a setup for the real thing. Satan runs his organization like a military terroristic concern. The lawlessness is paving the way for the lawless one, in my judgment. It would only make sense. When I decided to put God at the center of my broadcasting work and to leave local radio because I was being put under speech codes I would not abide, I had a moment of panic. I said to God, I don't know how to just podcast. I've always done radio. I don't know how to put your word at the center. And he said to me, Satan's a politician. It's just politics. It's just intersectional politics. I've equipped you for this. Stop making it hard. He's the world's first politician. Indeed, he is. And politicians always pave the way. It's called persuasion, outreach, turnout. First you persuade. Oh, pardon me. Persuasion, identification, turnout. First you persuade people to your point. Then you find the people you've persuaded. Then you get them to act on your behalf. That's how Go to Victory programs work politically. Satan has identified the people on his side. Now he's getting them to act towards what? In my judgment, to pave the way for the lawless one. Which brings me now to the Secret Service. The Secret Service boss lady, Kimberly Cheadle, explained why that rooftop was left unguarded. You will not and should not believe her.
Should that roof have been secure, period?
That building in particular has a sloped roof at its highest point. And so, you know, there's a safety factor that would be considered there, that we wouldn't want to put somebody up on a sloped roof. And so, you know, the decision was made to secure the building from inside.
Randy, will you run that again real quick? I want everybody to hear the boss lady of the Secret Service openly lying to their faces.
Should that roof have been secure, period?
That building in particular has a sloped roof at its highest point. And so, you know, there's a safety factor that would be considered there, that we wouldn't want to put somebody up on a sloped roof. And so, you know, the decision was made to secure the building from inside.
You're lying. I have no concern about bearing false witness at all. You're lying. A 1 second Google image search. Counter sniper team Trump shooting will reveal that the counter sniper who took that guy out was on a roof more sloped than the roof on which the shooter lay. Not less sloped. Two agents on that sloped roof, more sloped than the one on which the assailant body or belly crawled and then lay and then died. She's lying. I asked my friend Michael Rourke, the former Special Forces sniper and sniper instructor from whom you heard yesterday about that. Do you guys avoid going on sloped roofs? He said, to the contrary, we seek them out. They're perfect for us. That woman should be removed from her job and removed from ever working in government again. And we should pray for her. Do you remember her name? Kimberly Cheadle. We should pray for her. We'll come back with the Tower Babbling. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Here's one thing I want to get to soundbite wise just before we get to the Tower Babbling. Just one of these soundbites here. This is MSNBC's Joy Reid, who wants to make sure she wants to make sure you don't, you know, go out and get gaslit by the media.
Universal kind of reaction that I'm getting, whether it's civilians or, you know, professionals, is really a deep concern. And lack of confidence in not us at this table or us at MSNBC, but us as the media writ large. Hmm. And a fear that what's going to happen now is that the Republican Party will do what they do. They're in the middle of a campaign. They're, you know, the convention started today. But the media will acquiesce to trying to convince people that the things they've been experiencing for the last, you know, 5-6 years didn't happen. That the greatest purveyor and promoter of political violence, really, you know, since anyone can remember, and people are concerned and expressing concern that we won't be the guardians of memory. And that we will allow Donald Trump, as he is, you know, bathed in the glory and grandeur of his party, to rewrite himself as both a hero and a victim.
Huh. Behold, a woman who spent the last 2 years telling you that Joe Biden is of crisp mind and that anything to the contrary is a lie, on a network that told you that President Trump is a Russian plant and that Joe Biden is crisp of mind and anything else is a lie, a network that said that the so-called vaccines were safe and effective, a network that said it was the safest, most secure election in history, while not being able to describe which was in second place, doesn't want you to be taken in, gaslit, with a rewriting of recent history. I so appreciate Joy Reid looking out for me. What would we do without her? On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
And there's a lot of other, for example, the idea that we're, in terms of taxes, that they refuse to... For example, I was able to balance the budget and pass everything from the global warming bill. Anyway.
The Tower of Babbling.
three sound bites in today's Tower Babbling. Almost always three. We did four yesterday, right? Wow, bonus day. First one, in the wake of the near murder of President Trump, disgraced and impeached DHS boss Mayorkas proves himself to be just as corrupt and dishonest as he always has been.
I have 100% confidence in the director of the United States State Secret Service. I have 100% confidence in the United States Secret Service. And what you saw on stage on Saturday with respect to individuals putting their own lives at risk for the protection of another is exactly what the American public should see every single day. It is what I indeed do.
No, it's not. What we saw was three or four agents of the proper height and body size to be able to put their bodies around President Trump's. That's always been the case. You pick agents larger than the principal. When you have a very tall, big president, that's hard, but they do it. Agents need to be able to run through a motorcade for as long as the motorcade needs to run. They need to be able to keep stride with it at all times. The female agent, one of them, is heavy to the point of possibly being obese. I'm not body shaming. I used to weigh 400 pounds. My dad spent his life as obese. He could not be a Secret Service agent. When I was 400 pounds, I couldn't be. I'm not a good enough shot by a long measure. I had that pointed out to me when I went shooting with a Navy SEAL and a SWAT team head the other day. My pistol dynamics have gone straight into the toilet. Embarrassing. That's why I have to go out and practice my shooting. She couldn't get her gun out of its holster because of the sad condition of her body. The only reason she's in that position is because she is a woman. Had nothing to do with quality. Mayorkas has 100% confidence in the boss lady of the Secret Service. Well, we heard this before. But this CBS News piece is a reminder of what has been the focus and obsession of the Secret Service boss lady, Kimberly Cheadle.
They're aiming to have 30% women recruits by 2030.
But I'm very conscious as I sit in this chair now of making sure that we need to attract diverse candidates and ensure that we are developing and giving opportunities to everybody in our workforce, and particularly women. But we will always ensure the safety of all of our protectees that we have.
No, you won't. You didn't with President Trump. Not only was that lady having a struggle against her gun, but her body's just, has too much body fat to draw her weapon out quickly. Her body's too small in stature to fully cover that of President Trump. She shouldn't have been there. And she probably could have lost her life. Well, they all could have. She, more likely, because she was panicking. She didn't belong in the job. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. On CNN, Van Jones plays heads they win, tails we lose with this script. When Republicans don't have black people speak at convention, it's racism. When they do, it's cringy pandering.
You know, it's that was kind of cringy to me. We got half an hour into 8 o'clock. We had four African-American men. There's clearly an agenda here. And let me just say, I'm glad that the Republicans are trying to get black men. I think both parties should compete vigorously. There's an opening to get black men.
But it's cringy when they do it. Okay. Well, heads they win, tails we lose is a neat game, and the Democrats are very good at it. Let's at least give them that credit. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
Well, I'm sick and tired of smart guys.
On a Disciple's View.
I'm sure you heard that Microsoft is doing away with its diversity, exclusion, and inclusion team, DEI. This is good news. They say it's no longer business critical, and it never was. This is something on which I have a little bit of insight. I was there when this began to bubble up. I was working at Microsoft. I had a small team of people reporting to me. I had a very cool field title, very cool, Global General Manager of Media Strategy, very cool field title. Really what I was a senior director, but they gave me that cool title, and I appreciated that. It helped me get business done. It helped me get listened to, set the right appointments with the right people. And it was somewhat descriptive what I did for MSN. So I was in my office and I got a knock on the door. And it was a very nice lady. Well, she seemed very nice at first, who came in. She introduced herself and said, hey, our organization has been sending you some emails about helping to diversify your team. And we're concentrating on small teams, and we might be able to help you get more team members. Now, this is important. At Microsoft, there are two types of currency, or there was. I haven't worked there for a long time. Maybe it's changed. But there are two types of currency. One was having a revenue number. If you brought in revenue and it was substantial, that cemented your position at the company. I'd been lucky to work with a team that we took a product from $5 million to $25 million to $100 million, and it had a trajectory of becoming a billion-dollar contributor. Therefore, it was important to Microsoft. Therefore, I had a little bit of what we call juice. And the other form of power is people, or was. The more people you had on your team, the more power you had. So that's the game in corporate America, power. So when she said to me, I might be able to increase your number of team members, she was saying, I might be able to give you more power. So I said to her, oh, the diversity team, right. I said, can we baseline this? That's Microsoft speak. Can we agree to some terms? Can we baseline this? What does diversity mean? And she was flustered. She said, well, just diversifying our workforce. I said, yeah, no, I mean, but I know what the word means, but how do you apply it here? What does it mean in terms of humans? Well, we're just underrepresented, particularly with African Americans. Oh, okay, right. So we want to get more black people working here. Okay, so you can help me find the most talented, curious, ideologically curious, I meant by that, achievement-oriented, creative people with backgrounds in tech and media to come into my team since I work at the confluence of technology and media, right? Well, I mean, obviously we want that, but what's our prime goal is to have black candidates considered for jobs. I said, I'm in. When you bring to me the resumes of people who have got some experience in media and tech, and they have the characteristics of curiosity and skepticism and teamwork, and you can bring that to the table, yeah, I'm all in. She said, okay, obviously we want that outcome, but our focus is first to get the bodies here. The bodies. I said, the bodies? I said, wait, if we're just talking about hiring people for skin color, I'm out. No. They have to qualify, but we just want more black bodies. Okay, I'm out. I can't do that. It's unethical. She looked behind me and then she figured it out. I had a bookcase in my office. Lots of people did that. They had offices that would fit a bookcase in, and it was sort of passive aggressive. You'd put up the books you read, but there were some other books that people put up just to let you know. Like I read Sun Tzu, The Art of War. So, hey, don't come in and try to out-negotiate me. I had in my bookcase the book Shakedown about Jesse Jackson. And he's a Shakedown artist in my mind, in my opinion. She saw the book and then her eyes kind of got angry. And she said, oh, I think we're at an impasse, Todd. I'm sorry. I later got invited to another diversity meeting. And I've told you that story, so I won't tell it again. I just simply pointed out that in this meeting, everybody was either from Harvard, Yale, or Stanford, or I think there was an NYU person. I said, you know what? I'm super diverse. I'm a college dropout. I dropped out of the first year of community college. And the lady who ran the meeting, a nice woman who happened to be Asian, actually laughed and she said, you know what? In a weird way, he's right. Everyone else here comes from the same academic background. But that was my experience. Here's the reality for a friend of mine. As Microsoft has fired its DEI team, I have a question for them. Does my friend get his life back? I had a friend of mine who gave Microsoft 20 years. 20 years. And some of the best years of his life. He was productive and team-oriented. He is humble. He has never sought attention for himself, not once. And through hard work and traveling like a madman, and hours like a madman, and taking tasks that other people didn't want because they were hard, by doing deals that other people couldn't get done because he refused to give up, he eventually rose to a very vital position, running a core business unit's business development function. Core business. Perhaps the most strategic business Microsoft had. My friend got to a point where if any entity wanted to close a deal with Microsoft for that business unit, my friend had to review the contract. If he said no, it was no. He was what we call the as app, as appropriate. The contract only went there once everyone else has signed off and that one man could say no. That's power. You're talking about hundreds of millions and billions of dollars. My friend never treated it as power. He always treated it as stewardship. I'm stewarding investor money, shareholder money. I'm stewarding my team. He raised people up. He took young managers who had no managerial experience and he gave them opportunities to manage. He took young people who had never driven a negotiation and he let them drive negotiations. He did that to help raise up leaders for Microsoft. One day, he got a phone call. We're making a change. You're out. You can have a lateral transfer. You'll have 90 days to find a new job, but you're out. A woman's coming to take your place. And they actually said to him, this is non-negotiable. She is a diversity placement. She came from a PR background with absolutely no experience operating at that level of business, no experience in that core business unit, no experience negotiating anything. But she was Hispanic and female back when Microsoft believed there was such a thing as women. So she got the job. On a phone call when she was being launched into that position, another woman asked her, she said, you're actually taking this job knowing it's just because you're Hispanic? And the lady said, yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to need you guys to teach me this. I don't know this business. I know that. I'm going to need to teach you this. I need you to teach me. The woman who asked that question had been on the team under my friend for all those years, quit that day. She didn't leave Microsoft, but she left the organization. My question to Sanjay Gupta, the CEO of Microsoft, is, does my friend get his life back? In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Until the Lord decides you and I can speak again together, may His peace, which transcends everything, wash over you and your families. On behalf of AFR and Randy, I'm Todd Herman, and this is Ben of Disciples View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.